All right, welcome, folks. Welcome back to Larger, Freer, More Loving. As always, I'm Matt Levine.
I'm Dwight Lewis.
And today it's just Dwight and I because we're talking about something really close to home, where I live in what's now known as Portland. And so I'm sure y'all have seen Portland in the news lately. And so we're going to get into how we're seeing what's happening, but first, wanting to just start with some basic facts on the ground. And so while Portland became more in the Trump administration's mind this weekend, it's important to note that Trump and Portland have not exactly gotten along for quite some time. Remember back in the summer of 2020 when racial justice protests were happening all over the city, Trump sent in federal troops at that point as well. So this is not a new relationship, but the most recent thing that has happened is this weekend, Trump put out some messages on Truth Social announcing that he would be authorizing the National Guard to be deployed to this city, Portland. He says here, at the request of Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem, I'm directing Secretary of War Pete Hegseth to provide all necessary troops to protect war-ravaged Portland and any of our ICE facilities under siege, adding in particular that he was authorizing full force if necessary. And so it's important that was the messaging that came out this weekend. The legalistic process actually started on Sunday. So Trump invoked federal law Sunday morning to take control of a portion of the Oregon National Guard. And it's important to note that this is something that requires what's known as Title 10 of the United States Code to be invoked in order for the president to take control of the National Guard. And what happened immediately after that was Governor Tina Kotek and Attorney General Dan Rayfield of Oregon immediately sued the Trump administration, arguing that the conditions for Title 10 to be invoked, which are that an invasion has happened, a rebellion has happened, or federal laws cannot possibly be executed. These things have not happened. And as a result, the Trump administration should have no legal standing to federalize the National Guard. And so this is currently in the court systems. And we should note we are talking to you right now on Monday, September 29th. So that's the current situation. And there's a whole lot of legal mechanization. There's a whole lot of nuance. Pete Hegseth is trying to engage in some fuckery here to help out the situation. So, Dwight, anything you wanted to add there to the facts on the ground?
Yes, and I may ask you to tell us a little bit more about what Oregon's governor and attorney general are doing, but also what it's like being from Oregon and having this happen to you twice in 5 years. What's the second version of it feel like? But when we look at Title 10, what we see is that to begin with, for a president to be able to actually deploy the National Guard, they either need the Congress to declare, or they need consent from the state's governor, right? But this can be trumped if the Secretary of Defense waives these two rights, right? If they think it is bad enough, and that's what we see happen at Portland. And what I think is important to know as a backdrop to this, especially with Pete
Hegseth.
Hegseth, especially with Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, right? That when he was voted in, right, J.D. Vance actually had to cast a vote to make it where his vote was not tied. And also that, Trump, of course, gets to put this person in space in their place. Right, we also hear Trump saying in this tweet that we see happening on September 27th at 10:19, right? he says that he's directing, right? The Secretary of Defense. And I think it's just problematic to begin with. It is your job as the Secretary of Defense, Pete, to like stand in the fray and make the decision that is best in the defense of America, not to be pushed and prod and pushed over by the president. Your job is to be a counterbalance, right? I guess at this moment we're questioning Pete's ability to counterbalance. I'm gonna ask you, what does all of this really mean for Portland, right? I asked you this before, like, what is Portland doing in response? And also, like, how does it feel? How are people in Portland responding to this second invasion into Portland?
I really appreciate you asking that, and I appreciate you focusing on the actions of the Department of Defense or the Department of War and the Secretary of War at this moment, because that's really how it feels to me. And so I also appreciate you too mentioning counterbalance. We are in a state where counterbalance and resistance is absolutely necessary. And I think the only way that's going to happen is if we use plain language to talk about what's actually happening. And so, in my mind, I think the way we need to be talking about this situation is that the United States government, led by the Trump administration, with explicit backing from the Supreme Court and funding by Congress, has declared war on brown and black people, on Spanish-speaking people, on people with accents, on people who work certain jobs. And as part of that larger war, Trump has declared war on and invaded Portland, the place where I've lived for 5 years, and I've spent more time than any other since my partner's daughter moved here back in 2012. Her and her wife live just a couple miles away from me. We all live in North Portland. And I have so many frustrations with this city, and I have so many criticisms of this city, but I also love it. It's my home. And it's fucking disturbing to have this city that I call home be invaded by a white supremacist settler colonial military. But I think that's the language we need to be using here. That's the way we need to be talking about things, is talking about how serious of a situation this is in terms of a declaration of war, in terms of an invasion. And so I want to get into this language around a declaration of war and invasions, because it's going to be important for where we eventually go, that these are not taken to be hyperbole. And so I want to make it clear, it isn't just me saying things like this. Even literally former members of the Trump administration are using this kind of language. So here's Ty Cobb from the first Trump administration.
This is just craziness, and it is sad. I mean, and as you were going on with others about right now, we're in the middle of the invasion of Portland. That's not an accident. They're just the things that are going on here are more than one or two deviations from the.
Right. And so this is the language even from former Trump administration officials. They're using the language of invasion of war. And so I'm curious what you think, Dwight. This is how it appears to me sitting here in Portland. But I'm curious, am I being ridiculous insisting that what's happening with ICE, with DHS, with the National Guard, that this constitutes a war?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna be the I'm gonna push the legal side of this. And when I think about Title 10 in relationship to states' rights, and also the ways that states, right, where we Trump is using the same rhetoric, right, to of state rights to allow some complications in relationship to the people that in relationship to pro-life, right? In relationship to abortion. And here he's turning it against itself here, right? It's like I just want some legal consistency,
Right.
right? This to me seems like an invasion, a declaration of war in the ways that it has denied states their right to decide when they need to deploy their own National Guard or when they need to deploy this or that. And this seems like a wild time to be doing such.
Right.
Seems like a wild time to be doing such. It just legally feels like an overreach, right? And I think this overreach then turns into an invasion or declaration of war when you overreach with troops, right? So when you're overreaching with, you've turned reserves into active military agents. I think that's when we get into a complication. And this is the type of thing that ends up, we are 50 states. There is like, we are trying to allow ourselves to be ruled internally and externally, right, as a unit. And part of that means that you have to allow states to do what states do. That's why you can have somewhere like Minnesota, which has one of the highest state taxes, and Florida, which has no state tax, right? It's like these things matter. And when we start over-directing states, then we're no longer the United States of America. We're just America.
Right.
And I think it's important that we retain the United part, the United States. And I think this shows me a type of declaration of war that ends up trying to, that gets in the way of this United.
Yeah.
And I think this is foundational to who America is. And it's foundational in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And so, which I take to Trump Title 10.
No,
What do you?
this is super, super interesting here that you focus on this notion of consistency as necessary for that unity, right? Because this is something we see in fascist regimes throughout history, is that lack of willingness to apply the law consistently.
It's
And this is something that I've been thinking about a lot too, is the ways in which we see the hallmarks of increases in fascism all over the place in the United States right now. And one of those things that we see with the rise of fascism throughout the world, throughout history, is this idea of accusing your enemies of the very thing that you are guilty of. And so this is something that's been absolutely on my mind constantly when it comes to this notion of violence. I see what's happening as a declaration of war, as an invasion. And in my mind, this war has been allowed to be perpetuated because of lie after lie after lie. And again, I think those biggest lies surround violence. We sit here in a country that was founded on anti-Black, anti-Indigenous, and anti-immigrant violence. There simply would be no United States without anti-Black theft of bodies, labor, and life. There would be no United States without anti-Indigenous theft of land and life.
Hold on. Can you say that again for me? There would be no US.
There would be no US without anti-Black theft of bodies, labor, and life. And there would be no US without anti-Indigenous theft of land and life. And all of those processes were enormously, enormously violent. And the enforcement of immigration laws throughout the history of the United States has been excessively violent. The protests that have been happening at the ICE facility on South McAdam here have been a response to particular violences. And yet, they have the audacity to call us violent. And so I know that part of my perspective here is influenced by being a white man brought up in a white supremacist society where historically my body and people who look like me have not been subject to that violence. And so I'm curious for you, somebody coming at this as a black man who has had violence be something you have to worry about throughout your entire life. I'm curious how this lands for you to have white folks starting to worry about violence visited upon them. How does it land for you to hear the US government talk about citizens being violent? How does this notion of violence in the current moment land?
This is such a wild, I will say it is a wild experience, right? Because and I do think it's also there's ways that allow for white folk to feel some of the pain that like brown and black folk have been feeling for a long time. When you start seeing your government police you in your streets, right? Then things start to shift and change, and people are like, "Whoa, what's happening here?" And this is where I keep wanting to return to Kwame Ture, who tells us it's not about morality or ethics; it's about who has the power to be violent, right?
Right.
Who has the power to actually be violent? And it brings me, it keeps making me think about this, that, right, you are being defined as violent, and then you need help. And if you say you, and if you fight back against that help, then like they're able to double down on the fact that you're violent,
Yeah.
right? And so it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy to some extent. And you're just doing your, the rights that you have according to the Constitution. You're just implementing your rights of being like, no, we don't want you here. And actually, we're doing fine. And then, right, when we look at the actual data, right, because I'm going to keep doing this, because what I've learned as a black person here in the US in relationship to violence, that, everyone has to be able to see the video. Everyone's got to be able to see the video or whatever happened didn't happen. And so let's look at how Portland has been doing in relationship to crime this year, right? What is the truth is that they are down 51% in homicides from the first half of 2025. They're down almost 60% in gun violence since 2022, right? And then also we know from DC that there was a 30% decline in local business profits during the time, and still to some extent, in relationship to this deployment of the National Guard or deployment of whoever into DC. And so, the ways that what this is telling me, if I was governor, right, if I was attorney general in the same way that they're pushing back legally, I would be too, right? Because it's like we're actually doing better than we were doing. This seems like the non-time to do this. And also, we're living in a financial crisis as it is. And so, to put people in a space where they're going to lose 30% of profits in a fourth quarter, right? If they're finishing with the fiscal year ending in December, right? This is a not good for your city. Like, to me, this doesn't seem like something that if I was a governor, or if I was the attorney general, that I would really be wishing upon my city, because I'm gonna have to right these wrongs, right? I'm gonna have to figure out some way to come up with 30% to help these businesses survive. Like, and they've already been doing so much work in relationship to violent crimes, right? And so I really, I guess, am struggling with. When you're actually doing better, and the president of the United States can say, I actually just don't believe it, and can then call you violent and then force you into violence to stop him, It just leads to a snowball effect, right? And I actually just feel really bad for people in Portland at this moment, because it just seems like, I hate to use the term, this terminology, but it's just, vernacular, wild vernacular, but it's like Portland seems to be catching a stray, right? In relationship to, like, not even in relationship to something going poorly, like really bad in the United States, right? But in relationship to Trump's agenda, right? In relationship to the government's agenda catching a stray. And it's like, whoa, whoa, right? And it's, I think part of this is, what is the end goal of this for Trump? I don't know what it is, especially like Trump has been all about cutting the budget. Cut, 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 cut. This seems like somewhere where you don't need to spend more money based on the data that we have. So it's like, what, like, wait, so in this part, we don't want to cut the butt, we want to waste money? I'm like, what? Help me out, Trump. I'm confused. I'm confused at like what the end goal of this all is. Like, especially in relationship to what you've told me that your end goal is, which is like getting us out of this debt. Like, blah, 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 blah. It's like, this makes it doesn't seem like it's aiding in getting us out of debt, and so it's serving some other agenda. And I'm just concerned about that other agenda, right?
I really, really appreciate you bringing in this idea of sort of what are the conditions on the, what are the background conditions actually here? And then sort of what's been going on from Portland politicians and Oregon politicians that might actually give us a better sense of what Trump's real agenda is here. And so I'm wanting to bring in somebody who's unbelievably important to me. So yeah, I want to spend some time talking about what is really behind that agenda that's really making the Trump administration come after us. And I say us very intentionally here. The Trump administration and the US government are very clearly talking about me and my friends and my community when they talk about and issue executive orders concerning Portland, Antifa, the far left, domestic terrorists, and such. And so, as we dig into that, I've got to give a huge shout out to my closest friend in the world and the person I engage with in almost all of my activism in what's now known as Portland. Her name is Charlie Michelle Westley. Everything I'm talking about here comes from organizing and talking with and learning from her. She's an enrolled member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, a badass indigenous matriarch, grandmother, great. Great grandmother, organizer around our community here, member of her tribal health committee, member of the Police Accountability Commission here, member of the Community Board for Police Accountability, and much more. And so, wanted.
Shout out to the mothers, right? Shout out to the matriarchs. We just want to make sure that, in the past, especially in Black organizing in the past, the civil rights movement, we did not shout women out. And it is so important that we remind you there's no movement forward without women leading. There's no movement forward without women leading. As we saw with Me Too, as we saw with BLM, as we saw with the Women's March, right? There is no movement forward. Justice for Breonna Taylor.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Dwight. And yeah, so we want to lift up the leaders here in Portland. So this is me and Charlie out protesting, right? Again, this is the scene that Trump is calling war ravaged, right? And just so you know, here's a larger context, right? This is supposedly war ravaged Portland. And then even on the biggest mobilization, the biggest protest days, this is as rowdy as it looks. Us walking in the streets. And so everything I do here in Portland, I organize with Charlie. I could not possibly be here without her. Anytime we're engaging in protest activity, Charlie and I are working together. And even Dwight, when he's been out here with us, has done some protesting with Charlie and I. I want to actually bring in Charlie's voice here. Because Charlie's voice, I think, is relevant to understanding what Trump's real agenda is here. Trump is upset about the fact that there are things happening within this city that we're trying to do things differently. And so there's been concern at Portland City Council. There's been concern among community in Portland here for quite some time about what's happening at ICE facilities. Including the ICE facility here in Portland, which has repeatedly broken its own rules on detaining folks at the ICE facility. And so our city council, led by our amazing councilors, Samir Canal, Angelita Murillo, Candace Avalos, have been looking at what mechanisms we have to push back against the human rights violations that are being committed by ICE. And so, this is some of the activity that's happening at Portland City Council. And so, I want you to hear the amazing words from my friend here, Charlie Michelle Westley, that I think really gets at what's really going on in Portland. Trump sees courageous, brilliant human beings like Charlie and says, I need to make sure that's not happening. And so we want to lift up some of Charlie's words here so you get a chance to see some of the things that are happening in Portland that are so-called domestic terrorism.
You. I think Charlie Michelle Wesley is next.
Hi, I'm Council. I'm Charlie Michelle Wesley, Northwest tribal descendant with extensive inequitable lived experience, and it is with Hayash Temtem, a heavy heart, that the banner of Sanctuary City and claims of police accountability are false. As too many recent city-endorsed actions do not uphold that title, nor the safety and well-being of our immigrant community. The banner simply appears to be deceptively performative. We are witnessing unjust and unwarranted specific targeting, arrests, and violence by PPB in collaboration with federal agents without government transparency and accountability for actions at ICE and elsewhere, unleashing maliciousness on our immigrants at courts, schools, workplaces, as well as bigoted acts towards our courageous activists, one of which recently suffered a broken arm during a violent arrest, and others who are simply trying to prevent the inhumane abductions and racist-driven deportations, because we know this is not about criminal immigrants. That's propaganda. It's a repulsive racist action and an offense to humankind. The core city values and the city equity goals state we will strengthen public outreach for communities of color, the disabled, immigrants, and refugee communities, and support or change existing services using racial equity in all areas of government. One of the six city strategies towards equity, when change is a priority, urgency is felt, and urgency is key here. For communities, using a clear plan of action will allow accountability and transparency. Collectively, we must create greater urgency to achieve racial equity. In conclusion, it's obvious and unfortunate that peaceful protests only work if the police and agents don't show up and if all the city leaders have a conscience. Also, the absence of objection by the city allows the slide into fascism instead of dismantling it and prove we are, in fact, a sanctuary city with real police accountability and government accountability. Protect our immigrants, not xenophobic acts. Thank you.
Wow.
Right.
Oh, wow. This is so You're trying to give us some context of why something like this is happening. And what I'm getting from what Charlie was saying is that, she says at the end that Portland is a sanctuary city, right? So there are ways that ICE can't move, right? And so by deploying the National Guard, you can have them do ICE actions in a sanctuary city without having to deploy ICE. Whoa. Whoa.
So this, in my mind, this is what's happening, right?
Well, this.
Trump doesn't think that Portland is war ravaged. There's no
Whoa.
place to find anything war ravaged. What he sees is there are unbelievably courageous people like Charlie who are speaking out about the situation and who are showing different ways of being in the world and showing that there are radical ways of justice and healing that are having impact on what's happening with respect to our city government and our local government in terms of actually trying to live into being an actual sanctuary city. And
Yep.
Trump is terrified at the possibility of things like that happening. That's what I think is going on here.
Trump is picking ICE and anti-immigration over state laws. Like that, he would rather, what a wild thing that you would like the It just is so crazy to me. Now that I'm hearing this fully, it's like crazy that y'all on the podcast are getting literally getting me experiencing this in real time, because I am absolutely blown. I think I didn't put all these pieces together until hearing from you and from Charlie. Wow. You would rather, throw out people that have been living here for a lot of them living here for a long time, really don't have anywhere to go back home to. The majority of them, the majority of immigrants, right, actually living upstanding American lives.
Right. No, and I mean,
Would
and this
rather
is
deal with that than to like uphold state laws.
right.
Whoa.
And again, the claims of law and order here are so unbelievably hollow. I mean, right. I mean, we know generally study after study after study has showed all of the reasons that people claim to be against immigration are just lies. Natural born US citizens commit crimes at a higher rate than recent immigrants to the United States. Immigration to the United States lifts up economic situation for everybody. And so these things are just lies. And as we look at the way things are actually implemented, we see there is not a targeting of lawlessness or crime. There's a targeting of people of color. There's a targeting of people who speak Spanish. There's a targeting of people who have accents. I mean, just last week in our city, I mentioned my partner's daughter, and I live in the same part of the city. In between us, there's an elementary school called Cesar Chavez. Just last week, ICE did some really, really sketchy kidnapping of parents walking their kids to Cesar Chavez High School. Excuse me, to Cesar Chavez Elementary School. Right? It's not an accident that Cesar Chavez is the school that they were hanging around. It's not an accident that all of the parents that were detained and arrested were brown. It's not an accident that the father of three, who was expeditedly deported this week already, was brown. Right? This is not targeting lawlessness. This is not targeting crime. This is targeting brown people and members of our community who are unbelievably important to us. And it's leaving horrific impacts on families, on communities.
Yep, 100%. I think that's the like people don't understand the emotional toll right? The toll on communities. Let's also talk about the toll on businesses. Let's not sit here and lie and play games about who's cooking your meals.
Right.
Let's not sit here and lie and talk about who's making sure that you have vegetables and fruits to get out of the grocery store. Let's not lie about who's cleaning your house, who's fixing your roof, right? We know who these people are, right? You see them every day. You see them when you pull into a Home Depot, when you pull into a Lowe's, right? Waiting and willing to work. And we can't separate that work or their humanity from the families that are dealing with all these things that are going on around them. I couldn't imagine waking up one day and my dad being deported. What would that mean for my family? How would our whole being have to shift?
No, and I mean, we have this happening in situations with masked, unidentified ICE agents kidnapping people on the streets. And
When
so
we are
they're not even recognizing for sure, where has my family member been taken? Where is my family member being detained? Where is my family member being deported to? This is what's happening around us all of the time.
And imagine, if someone getting lost in this, right? Someone getting, it's like if your family member doesn't have like a phone number memorized or this, like how hard is it gonna be, right, to get back in? I really already hate this idea, but like the way that I understand how much family and community matters in my life. Man, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it without them. And I think, I think that, we all, not just people on the other side, right? We all need to have a humanity check. Right? It's like, where is your humanity? Right? I mean, this is all that MLK was really trying to do with nonviolent protest, right? It's for people to see violence thrust upon people and to see that they are humans and to grasp at their humanity. And now it's like we're post-humanity, right? We don't care. They've desensitized us over the last 70 years, killing people, putting it on the news, surveillance of us that like we are, and then we go to these, right? And deeper you get, the further and further away I think you get from humanity. And I'm like, we need a humanity check. We need to like wake up and see each other as humans and to see each other as complex beings within a complex like community of other beings that are needed. And that there are, and that like, just like you said, right, that violence is going to happen. It is. But it is usually the people that are like that are least amongst you that are doing violence upwards in the social chart, right? It's the people that are higher up that are doing violence downwards,
Always doing
hand,
violence
right?
down.
And I think it's super important to see, to understand that like if you're higher up on the social chart, you are a part of this violence, whether you're progressive, liberal, neoliberal, middle, conservative, right, libertarian, far right, alt right, like it doesn't matter. Like you're above these people socially, and economically, most likely. And so you can punch down, right? But these people are like not able to do the same, not able to move in the same ways. I mean,
So no, I think this idea of a humanity check is so unbelievably important. And so I want to have us continue on that for a little bit. And the first thing I want to do in terms of a humanity check here is actually just thinking about the human situation of if you find yourself a target of ICE, a target of DHS, a target of the National Guard, a target of Portland Police Bureau. One of the things that those of us in the protest movement and mutual aid communities here in Portland do is we make sure people have resources. And so I've got up on the screen here a reference to our most recent community jail support guide. And up on the screen are references to services. If you find yourself, again, a target of ICE, of DHS, of PPB, of the Oregon National Guard, of the Trump administration, please check out these resources. And so I just want to do a sort of humanity check in terms of people's physical needs on the ground. And I also want to do a humanity check in terms of the way that these protests get talked about, the protesters get talked about. And so there was a clip from a local news station that a local community member who lives near the ICE facility on South McAdam was interviewed, and she had some really interesting things to say. So I want to bring her voice in to move our conversation forward on this humanity check idea.
Said, we also have talked to folks here on the ground who have been living with this day in, day out for many months now. One of those people goes by the name of Minnie. She has an Instagram account called Balcony Lady. I had the opportunity to speak with her just a few moments ago, and you know, she has a unique perspective because she's not a protester. She lives here and has witnessed it from her balcony night after night. Take a little listen to what she had to say.
Some of the stuff that you see on the news, you don't see the full thing. Like, you don't see the rallies of the elderly ladies coming down here and putting flowers down there. And you don't see the interfaith rally, you know, where they're walking down here with signs and the monks. You don't see the ladies with their rugs sitting right there, you know, crisscross applesauce holding a sign. You don't see that. But you see the chemicals and you see protesters running away when they're being shot at and hit with shields with their back turns as they're trying to help somebody up. I don't know how all of that is translated into Portland is a hellhole.
And so, as I think about the ways in which the administration and the national media and the local media dehumanize immigrants, dehumanize people protesting for those immigrants, again, I think it's important for us to think about sort of what's the information we're taking in. How are we thinking about the ways in which we are being served a particular narrative? And how are we remembering to trust our eyes, trust our ears, trust the things we hear and see in our communities rather than those lies that get perpetuated to dehumanize? And so, yeah, I just think this idea of a humanity check, myself included.
Yeah,
Like I
same.
want to make like I'll be honest, one of the things that's been frustrating me the most in this current moment is how much I hear people saying all the time the Trump administration is so un-American. I'm like, I got lots of issues with the Trump administration, but if anything, I think those issues come from how unbelievably American the Trump administration is, not how un-American. And so I bring this up because I think a lot of us, all of us, have some soul searching to do around how have we been complicit in systems that allow for this to happen.
One of the things I loved, sorry, I'm bringing this back to Charlie. One of the things I love that Charlie said, where she says she has extensive, inequitable experiences. And I was like, experience. And I was like, whew, she's got experience in human brokenness, right? Extensive experience in human brokenness. And I think these are the things that allow us to show up well. And I'm not saying that you have like that, then brokenness is like such a great thing, right? I'm not saying be beat up. What I am saying is that it's important to understand where you're at, right? And then check your privilege, or even check the ways that you are being beat up in the world, both and, right? And I think, Matt, even like at the beginning of this, brought up about him being, a white man or presenting in the world as a white man, and what that means for him, right? That's like making sure that you're checking your positionality as you move through the world. I oftentimes have to check the fact that I get to move through the world super able-bodied, that I get to move through the world. And even though my like maleness is marred by my blackness, I still get to move through the world with some of that power, right? I get to move through the world now like financially okay in ways that I didn't grow up, right? And because of all of these things, it can make me blind to other people's humanity. So then I have to go out of my way to become aware of these things. We all know this. This is things we all know. But I think right now is a real moment of not just like thinking about those things, right? But actually like looking at what's happening, feeling what's happening to these families, feeling what it's like literally attempting to empathize and feel with what it's like to be ripped away from your family and tossed 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 miles away. What would you want people to do for you? How would you want people to respond? And I'm gonna ask Matt this as we start, as we've talked through this, you're there on the ground in Portland, in a way that, the majority of us can't be. What are the things that have been coming up for you? And I'm gonna ask you to be a little bit vulnerable here, but what are the things that have been coming up for you emotionally? I think so many times we want the facts, we want the justice, we want the this, but, and again, we've been talking about humanity, so now I wanna give you a chance to give us some humanity about what's been coming up for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot. Because there's been a lot of sadness. There's been a lot of sadness. There's been sadness at the fact that, as horrific as the violence is that the US government is trying to perpetuate on the city of Portland, as horrific as that is, it's sad to me that people are surprised by that. It should be shocking, but not surprising to me. Because if you think about the history of this city and this state, Portland was formed by colonizers committing genocide in the 1840s, right? The state of Oregon was formed as the only all-white state, right? It was illegal to be black in the in Oregon. This was built into the Oregon Constitution. And this violence continued. One of the things that people don't know about this city, Portland was the center of the Ku Klux Klan outside of the South. So Portland Police was formed in the context of Portland, Oregon, and the Pacific Northwest being the height of the Ku Klux Klan outside of the South. And racial violence has been a fixture in this city, in this state, in this country. And so I get sad both at the fact that there are people looking at the current situation and say, oh, this is okay. But I also get sad at people saying, this is horrific and this is unique. Because this is horrific, but this is not unique. What's unique is that people who look like myself are also now becoming some of the targets, right? Black folks, brown folks, indigenous folks, non-binary folks, women, people with disabilities, they've been the targets for hundreds of years at this point. And so it makes me sad that we're unwilling to see the ways in which this moment is part and parcel of the United States, of the modern Western world. And so, honestly, some of the things I've been feeling myself are, how am I falling prey to that as well? And what am I doing? How am I seeing my agency, my control, my obligation, my duty in this moment? Because I'm worried about where this goes from here. And, I worry for myself, I worry for my family, I worry for my community, and I worry for those who have already historically been targets of this government. Because even when it includes people that look like me, even when it includes white folks, even when it includes folks with traditionally dominant identities, it still falls first and worst on the people who are already marginalized and already oppressed. And so I'm worried about how my personal sadness, my personal worry, and folks who look like me, other white folks' personal sadness and personal worry is going to be felt in relation to that sadness for communities that we don't necessarily belong to. And so I'm really trying to figure out in this moment, how do we all see that basically, unless you're a billionaire white man, this shit is going to be dangerous for you. So I'm hoping that people can both see that and feel that and be motivated by that and not lose sight of the fact that that fear, that worry, that danger is not going to fall equally. It's going to fall disproportionately on folks that are already marginalized. And so I think it's going to be a tricky dance for us to keep in mind both of those facts. And so I got feelings about my own ability to do that. I got feelings about Portland as a city being able to do that. Portland is the clueless white liberal capital of the world. And so as soon as white liberals in Portland, we start to think that we're being targeted as well, that cluelessness has a danger of just focusing inward on ourselves. And so how are we doing that humanity check that you named to remember, to recognize that as much as we have things to worry about, that worry is going to be first and worst on BIPOC communities, on lower socioeconomic status communities, on immigrant communities. And so, yeah, I'm trying to figure out how we think about that solidarity, that doesn't forget individual identities.
Yes, I love that. Yo. Ooh. Yeah.
How are you feeling about that? What do you think I'm missing? Because I think one of the things we need in this moment is partnership, collaboration, feedback, accountability. What am I missing, Dwight? What, how, what do I need to be pushed on?
No, I ain't even, you're on the ground in, the shits. I'm here to do is encourage to some extent. I think, I'm just sending you, staying power. I'm sending you energy. I'm sending you love. I'm sending you, connection in the community. Things that will allow y'all to stand strong. And, we had, there was a phrase that came out of the civil rights, Black Power. And it was a uniting force. It was a big shift thinking about blackness in a positive way, and making that a calling cry, calling card, calling cry. I'm just hoping, I think that your community continues to come together and connect, because I think it is in that connection when we put down the media, when we put down the fake news, and we actually begin talking to our neighbors again, where we can like build a community worth building. And so I think these type of events hopefully will lead you to be talking to your neighbor. We all can work together as a unit to acquire whatever the goal might be. And I'm not saying, I know what goal I want. But that may be different from people in particular communities, which gets complicated, right? And how do we do, like dealing with that is another whole thing. And then the other thing, I guess, this has nothing, this is just out of left field, right? Why Portland, right? It's like Portland is number seventh on the violent crimes per capita for 20, I think it's 2024. They are seventh on that list. But there are five, six cities above that, right? And the shift that takes place is massive in those like those top five, really those top three. And I don't know, maybe I've missed this, but I haven't heard, and I don't want to say these cities' names, but I'm gonna say them. Like Memphis is number one. I haven't heard anything about Trump in Memphis. Maybe you have. Oakland is number two. And I heard stuff about LA, right? But not Oakland. Number three is St. Louis. Have you heard things about St. Louis?
I have. He is talking about Memphis,
Oh yeah, it's talking.
but I haven't heard of Oakland and St. Louis.
And then let's not even like let's not lie, Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota is number six. I'm in that city right now, and I'm gonna let you know that there was last week over 20 people got shot within two blocks of me. Then two blocks of my house, over 20 people got shot. And I'm sorry, I'm not hearing the same, man. Maybe that is happening the same way in Portland. But that's not what I'm hearing from people from Portland, folks from Portland. And so it's like, yo, we also don't have like our police force has gone down because of course like the response from George Floyd and holding police accountable, right? And so we it's like this, I don't know why. Like if I'm gandering here, this seems like a city worth doing it. We got Tim Walz who went against you. We got the longest standing liberal state. And it's like, why Portland and not Minneapolis? I'm just like, what are you getting out of Portland? We're a sanctuary city also, right? Sanctuary cities. And so it's like, what? What are you afraid of the fight? Like, is Portland the stepping stone to places like Minneapolis?
Right, and that's my worry, that it is a stepping stone. And so that's why I so appreciate what you said about us being connected and needing to find that collaboration and solidarity and connection and community. It reminded me of Angela Davis, right, who says it's in collectivities that we find reservoirs of hope and optimism. And so I just want to say I'm unbelievably appreciative to be a part of a collectivity with you. That's where I find hope. That's where I find optimism. That's where we're going to continue to resist what's happening right now. That's where we're going to continue to find freedom, joy, and belonging together. That's where we're going to continue to find hope, to find optimism, to find healing, to find justice.
Yes. The only way, what Matt gives to me in connection and community and communion is a refuge, right? And these are things that like are so important in all of our lives, particularly lives of those that are systemically oppressed, right? And so I think we will end this episode challenging you, listener, to point out, write out those spaces of refuge for you. I work on my college campus, and so I literally have a map of the college, and I've marked out spaces of refuge, right? What does it mean for you to know places where you can go to get refreshed and to get loved and to know that you will be safe, right? I think these are the things that we have to start finding and identifying at this moment in time. And it's better to do it earlier than late. And so I just challenge you to find those spaces of refuge, whether it be a home, whether it be a bar, whether it be a grocery store, whether it be a street, right? Whether it be a friend's house, whatever it might be. Because what I'm going to tell you is that we're going to have to use those spaces. We may have to use those spaces of refuge in the future for our folk that are dealing with ICE at this moment, right? Oh my God. It is so hard to start thinking about having to do a new Underground Railroad.
Right.
Which is just insane. And then there's nowhere to take, it's an underground hiding. I think I'm just like, prepare yourself, and prepare your community with spaces of refuge.